Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland in a jazzy smoothie kind of feel today. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy, and with me is the lovely, the jubilant, the bit winded, Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
Hi, good morning. I'm well. Look, people, I'm sorry we're late. I got stuck behind two trains, okay? I was waiting. I was going to be here so early, so on time, so leisurely.
Yeah.
Train comes, you know what, I can handle that. I got good patience. What can I do about it? I can't get around this train.
And safety first and teamwork.
A good 10 minutes. And then suddenly I hear a train whistle and one comes in the opposite direction. So it was an exercise in patience for me this morning, especially because I could not wait to be here for our interview guest today. Tammy, are we ready to jump into
that? Oh, yes. Let's jump into it. You've been talking about this for, 2 years? 3 years?
I know.
Finally.
We're talking about the charter change amendment today. We're speaking with Damon Mott-Story, the communications manager for Portland United for Change, which is advocating for the passage of the Portland Charter Change Amendment Measure 26228. Welcome, Damon.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
And thank you for your patience
for me
being stuck behind the train.
I've been stuck behind that train far too many times myself. I get it.
Yeah. I'm on the coming down from the high of the train and trying to race down Produce Row to get here. But yeah, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, such a joy to be here. Yeah, I'm just so excited about Measure 26228. Again, this is the Change Our City Charter measure, and it's been many years in the making, as you've said, supported by the ACLU of Oregon, the NAACP Portland branch, the League of Women Voters of Portland, and a long list of community groups and business leaders, political science experts. It's real good stuff. Democracy reform at its finest.
Yeah. And I want to get into all of the details of that because it does make these critically important changes to our city government structure. I want to first start with where we are today.
Yeah.
What is the current situation of city government and why do folks want to change it?
It's been a great road leading to where we are right now. So on the November ballot, voters will get to choose on Measure 26228, which would give us ranked choice voting, city council districts where the city would be broken up into four city council districts with three representatives each. And then we would also transition to a professional city administrator to oversee all of the city's bureaus and agencies, rather than the situation we have right now, where each of our five city councilors all manage different city bureaus that can be shuffled around by the mayor. It's very dysfunctional and uncoordinated and means that a lot of city services suffer as a result. So there's been a really big growing chorus of voices from pretty much every sector in the city saying we need to change this. And then furthermore, another thing that has been a growing chorus has been saying that our voting systems are not working to represent all Portlanders either, right? Only five city councilors for a city of over 650,000 people. Time to modernize that. We really haven't changed our city charter very substantially since 1913, over 100 years. So every 10 years, though, the city council convenes what's called a charter review commission. So that's what happened in 2020. Each of the five city councilors, including Mayor Ted Wheeler, all appointed four people to this commission so that there were 20 people tasked with saying, what are the biggest problems facing Portland? What are the biggest challenges we have? And what about our government structure is holding us back from being able to address those challenges and really be at our best as a city? So they listened to over 500 workshop participants, thousands of public comments and survey results from so many different Portlanders over the process of 18 months, wherein they were also researching what are the best models of city councils across the planet, right? They talked with people in Ireland. They talked to people all over the world, right, to be able to see what is it that we can do to give us the democracy that we need that works for Portland.
Tammy, oh, you got me. Okay, great. Yeah, it's very, very exciting. And I think, you know, just an important moment to reflect on the way that things are in Portland and just how many of them can be sourced back to this antiquated commissioner form of government. Tammy, how you doing over there?
Yeah, I mean, I know that this is something that we've talked about on the show many of times, right?
Yeah, I haven't been able to shut up about it since I started like pulling the thread myself of why is Portland like that?
For sure. Know? And I mean, yeah, you know, like piggybacking off of that, can you talk a little bit about the history of how this measure came about and like maybe in another, maybe cheekier way, why now?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, so the Charter Review Commission has now been working at this for a long time, and they finally came to a consensus on June 14th of this year to move Measure 26228 to the voters and refer it to the people to decide. And that was really an extraordinary decision, right? Because these are 20 people that were elected by or appointed to this commission by each of the different city councilors. So really the full ideological spread of Portland's local leaders here. And 17 out of 20 of them came together and said, yes, these are the changes that we need. That's 85% of that 20-person commission. And we're talking about, you know, folks that are not always on the same side of political issues who are coming together to say, you know what, this system is not working. It's not serving Portlanders, and we really do deserve better structure so that we can have a better chance of addressing all of the most urgent things that are facing our city, things like housing and homelessness. We're in a many, many years-long housing crisis now, right? So it's really this commission is urging Portlanders to vote yes on this because it's been so long since we've updated this structure of government, and we are, in fact, the last big city in America to use this commission form of government, where we basically elect politicians who then directly oversee the day-to-day operations of city bureaus. There are no other big U.S. cities that still use that model, this is now our opportunity to move forward from it and also get some fantastic electoral changes as well, right, that will make it much easier for people of all ideologies and backgrounds to be represented in City Hall. I think one of the other things that's sort of a why now is if we look back to the November 2020 election, Mayor Ted Wheeler was reelected with less than 50% of the vote in a runoff election, right? That really shouldn't be happening. With ranked choice voting, that means we're going to have full preferences on voters' ballots, and we'll be able to have an instant runoff election. That means we won't have to have a primary. It'll be much more efficient. It'll save a bunch of money. And it will also mean that people are not being asked to go to the ballot in the middle of the spring when not a lot of people know that there is another election happening then. It will now mean that city council races will all happen when they coincide with the November general election, when there's much greater awareness about that election happening.
Yeah, the decisiveness of the May primary in Portland is an issue because few people vote, and suddenly now you don't get to decide or cast a vote for city councilor.
That's right. And not only do fewer people vote, but also it tends to be a disproportionately whiter and older part of the electorate that votes in those primary elections. So it's very undemocratic because it means it's not actually fully representative of the people, those votes. But people can win four-year terms on city council by just getting 50% outright in those primaries. So that's one of the many big advantages of Measure 26228.
Yeah, and that's just a small slice of who's going to vote. So looking at this new system, if it does get adopted, if voters vote yes on it, what kind of outcomes could we see with a different city council model?
I'm so glad you asked this question. So essentially, everything that the city does, from the Water Bureau to Parks and Recreation to the Fire Department, which also includes Portland Street Response, the nonviolent first responders program to help people in mental health crisis, all of these different agencies are managed by different politicians right now. And when they disagree with each other, that can mean that, like, we have a very lopsided and uncoordinated response to the issues that our city is facing. Under this new model, a professional city administrator would be appointed by the mayor, but then approved by our city council, which means that there's a good system of checks and balances over this particular individual. But the most important thing is that we'll be giving it to one person who is a professional and well-qualified to be managing these large, complex city bureaus. Right now, when we elect somebody to city council, we're not really vetting them based on their ability to oversee the Parks Department, right? They're usually championing some kind of a cause, a policy issue that matters to a certain subsection of Portlanders, and that's how it should be. So in the new system, city councilors will be able to focus on those higher-level issues, passing policies and budgets that then support the kinds of different outcomes that Portlanders need, and they're not going to be tied up all the time with managing bureau directors and big bureau agency budgets and things like that. That will all be consolidated under this professional city administrator. And so I think we're going to see much more coordinated responses to things. Another piece of this measure is we'll have local district representation for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that parts of the city that are currently overlooked by city services are going to have local champions who will come forward and be able to make sure that the potholes get filled east of 82nd Avenue
mm-hmm.
and that we build sidewalks for the first time ever on some of these streets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in East Portland for many years. It's been really disheartening to see the lack of streetlights and safe road crossings and things like that. I think people are really kind of fed up and sick and tired of being, you know, neglected like that just because
mm-hmm.
they're in a part of the city that doesn't have a lot of political representation.
Mm-hmm.
And this measure promises to change that, right? Like, this measure is building the environment within which we can be the best city that we can be.
Right, and give people the option to have somebody to hold accountable.
That's right.
Until very, very recently, nearly all city commissioners were from the West Hills, rich white guys.
Right, right. And the inner east side, too. Yeah,
yeah.
So most of the city councilors have only ever come from very small pockets of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Only two city commissioners in Portland history have lived east of 82nd Avenue. Only five people of color have ever been elected to Portland City Council, and only nine women have ever served on Portland City Council. So in
mm-hmm.
our entire history as a city, we've seen just a really persistent lack of diversity in many different forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a measure that will make it so that more people can be on city council from more parts of the city, from more ideologies and identities.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about in our and when we were preparing with you for this interview was how the process and this amendment and this change is tied to the racial justice movement. Obviously, it happened in 2020, so it is in that context, but it does do a lot of racial justice stuff that Portland hasn't done.
That's right. I'm glad you asked this. So the Charter Commission was appointed sort of in the aftermath of the 2020 uprisings and sort of revitalization, the sort of new surge of energy into the Black Lives Matter movement. And that was one of the charges for this commission, was to say, what are the ways in which communities of color are being held back by the current structure of Portland city government? And what can we do to break away those barriers? And so when you look at the demographics of Portland, because of gentrification and displacement and the way that that has played out in our city, it means that communities of color are very diffuse and spread out across a lot of different neighborhoods. North and Northeast Portland, Outer East Portland tend to be areas where there are more communities of color, but you cannot draw a single district in Portland, even if you gerrymandered it like out the wazoo. You would still not be able to draw a district in which communities of color were the majority.
Mm.
And so it was very important for the Charter Commission to figure out, how can we make sure that communities of color are empowered to have representation, to be able to select people consistently on Portland City Council? And so they came up with a form of government that's very common around the world, a form of elections called proportional representation.
Mm-hmm.
This is when you take ranked choice voting, where you can rank all the candidates on your ballot in order of preference, and you combine that with multiple winners, right? And so what this means is, in each of the four new city council districts, three representatives will be elected in each to serve on city council. And so they all will run at the same time under a ranked choice voting election. And then the top three candidates will all serve on city council. What that means is that you get representation that's proportional to your share of the population. And so if, you know, over a quarter of a district rallies behind one candidate who is championing their cause, then that candidate should get one of that district's three seats.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it would work under the Measure 26228. And research has shown that when you have proportional representation like this, it means that minority groups are able to have at least one person on city council representing their point of view, right? And so that's a very important thing. It means that, you know, you're no longer having the whole city represented by people who are winning just a slim majority. And that that is what research shows will give communities of color and other minority groups like renters, the working class in Portland, the ability to have representation on city council consistently.
Mm-hmm. Tammy.
Thank you so much. This is so great. One thing that, two things. One thing that comes to mind is the word sortition and the practice of it. And I'm like, this is very interesting. And it's kind of I mean, it's not, you know, in its fullest form, but it's just interesting to see how much of it we're borrowing from it and allowing it into our city and our systems. Mm-hmm. But I guess to contextualize to listeners, could you kind of explain how, and again, you don't really have to, because, you know, going back in history or reflecting back on history, how would this have worked in the last election? As we saw, there was a write-in campaign for Theresa Rayford, and she did get a lot of, like, she got a good percentage, enough to
16-18%, I think.
Enough
maybe
to throw,
12?
Yeah, enough to throw the, well, throw, but, you know, to right. end up causing Ted Wheeler to kind of win by default, you know? So how would this have worked then?
Yeah, that's a really, I love taking a look at the November 2020 election as an example of why we need election reform, because that was a runoff election, right? Like, a bunch of people threw their hat into the ring for the primary in May of 2020 for the mayor's race. But then the way that Portland's election system works now is that the top two that come out of that primary election, if no one candidate gets 50%, then the top two move on to the general election and face off against each other. But as you pointed out, those top two candidates, Ted Wheeler and Sarah Iannarone, were not really cutting it for all people in the city, right? Not everyone was feeling like either of those two people were their favorite champion. And so a movement really coalesced around the write-in campaign for Theresa Rayford. And it meant that in that runoff election, about 53-54% of people picked somebody who wasn't Ted Wheeler as their first choice, right? They either voted for Sarah Iannarone, or they wrote in for a candidate. They don't reveal who that person is, but we all assume that it's Theresa Rayford because she was the one running a write-in campaign. And so what that means is we had a very undemocratic result. This was already a runoff election. And it meant that somebody was elected who still was not getting a majority of the vote. And other people had, you know, a majority of Portlanders picked someone else as their first choice. Under ranked choice voting, we would not have to do two separate elections in order to get our results. Voters can rank as many candidates as they want in order of preference on their ballot. So if you don't get your first choice, if your first choice comes in last place, your ballot gets automatically recounted for your next choice, and you count ballots in rounds like that until the winner is declared. And so it means that voters can rest easy knowing that their full preferences are on the ballot. How many times have we ever gone to the ballot and gone, ugh, these choices are rough, and I'm going to pick the person who I think strategically is most likely to win and who is also closest to my values, but they might not actually be the person that I want to win the most, because that person might sort of be infeasible or unlikely to win. So ranked choice voting is going to fix that, and it's going to make the voting process feel a lot better for everyone involved. And it's going to mean that without having to do multiple elections, we can just instantly go through the runoff process of going through people's full choices and making sure voters' full voices are heard.
Thank you for that. And kind of going back to the actual measure itself, you kind of talked a little bit about it and how it'll impact our daily lives. And I guess, you know, more in like City Hall and stuff, and, you know, the potholes past 82nd, which is, oh my goodness, very true. It's like the insurance and the tires are in cahoots together or something. But what would be, you know, like my cost to this? You know, how would this impact our pockets as tax payers and just, you know, residents of the town?
I'm so glad you asked this. So this is not a tax increase or a new levy or surcharge or anything like that. The city budget's office has estimated that this measure would cost at most 0.14% of the city's annual budget. Not 14%, 0.14%. And so that's a very small amount, and the city is going to be able to pretty easily, you know, just make this a part of their budget to implement this measure and keep it going on an ongoing basis. And the important thing is also to remember that we're going to see an enormous amount of cost savings from this. The amount of money, that taxpayer money that is lost to the uncoordinated, dysfunctional commission form of government that we currently have, it's hard to quantify that, but I'm imagining it's an enormous number. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that by using ranked choice voting and picking our representatives in just one election, it means that we are going to save money on only doing one election for local city races. And that matters because even though Multnomah County are the ones that run the elections process, Portland has a public financing system that matches campaign contributions. And so the city itself will also save money by not having to publicly finance two elections. They'll only be publicly financing one. So we're going to see a lot of cost savings from this measure that were not taken into account when the city was, you know, calculating the fiscal impact of this measure. Mm-hmm. So it's important that voters both know that this is a very, very cost-effective, affordable measure that is not going to increase our taxes, and that the city is going to see big cost savings and efficiencies because of it.
I mean, it sounds great. You know, it's making things more efficient. It's going to save us money. And, you know, one thing we talk about on this show every election season is, you know, those kind of shortcuts to figuring out who you might align with. So seeing that the ACLU of Oregon, the League of Women Voters, endorsed this measure, I think is really telling about what kind of impact we can expect it to have. What I want to ask now is, who is opposing it? Who's saying no, and why are they saying that?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. So the coalition behind the support campaign, the Yes campaign for Measure 26228, is huge. It's over 50 organizations who have endorsed the measure, dozens of business leaders, political scientists, and community leaders. And to date, we have not been able to identify a single organization or institution that has voted to endorse the No campaign. So the No campaign was started by defeated city council candidate Vadim Mozersky, who came in third place in the race for Joanne Hardesty's seat in the May 2022 primary. He is working together with a group of former City Hall staffers and former city council members who are all basically kind of representative of a group of people for whom the system has been working, right? Mm-hmm. The pretty large common denominator on the opposition here is that these are all people that have been able to figure out how to make our current government system work for them and their interests. Mm-hmm. And what you see on the Yes side is an enormous and diverse coalition. In addition to the ones that I named earlier, you know, we also have the endorsements of Latino Network, the Portland Urban League, the Native American Youth and Family Center, and the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. Just a very broad cross-section of different civic groups in Portland that are serving a wide range of different communities. So I think that really tells a big story in and of itself, right? Like, there are folks that are willing to continue letting Portland suffer under its dysfunction so long as they can control what the, you know, exact outcome of the new form of government is going to look like, right? That's what the No campaign really represents. And then the Yes campaign is really representing a visionary, hopeful future of saying, we've built this measure together, you know, over the course of 18 months of hard work and community engagement. And we know that if we continue to delay this change, we're just going to see more dysfunction and our city will not be performing at its best.
Yeah. There was also a couple months, or I guess last month, a challenge to the structure of the ballot measure, saying that it had too many things on it, or yes, we agree with this, that things should change, but it shouldn't be like this. We should do it later, and we could do it in the next primary or something like that. What is your response to that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. So at the end of the summer, the Portland Business Alliance filed a lawsuit saying that there were too many different changes packaged into Measure 26228. The Charter Commission... We'd have 12 people on city council all representing different neighborhoods. So you could have like some person in Selwood who's suddenly running the police department for the entire city.
Yeah.
right. And that would just be really bad. Mm-hmm. So these changes are very interdependent and unified in their goal. And so it really was a non-starter to take a look at these things individually. And this happens in policymaking all the time, right? Like, bills get passed in the state capital that have a lot of different things happening in one bill, and that sometimes is necessary when you have, you know, sort of interconnected pieces of policy. Mm-hmm. So the Multnomah County Circuit Court judge threw the Portland Business Alliance's lawsuit out of court and said, the Charter Commission was right to put these things all together. They are all in service to, you know, reforming democracy and government in Portland. So that's a unified purpose. And so that's why we have just the one measure for the City of Portland charter change. I should also mention, though, that there will be quite a lot of Multnomah County charter changes that are also on the ballot that are also very important. And voters should, you know, do their research and take a look at those. Ranked choice voting is one of them. Voting rights for non-citizens is one of them in Multnomah County. So really exciting measures that that Portlanders should take a close look at. But the measure we're talking about here is the Portland City Charter change.
Thank you for that clarification. The Portland Business Alliance, the PBA, did a survey recently which got leaked to the Oregonian. What was your reaction to that? What did it show, and yeah, what does that indicate?
Yeah, so the Portland Business Alliance recently paid for a poll that asked voters, would they support this ballot measure if the election were held today? And the answer was 63%, about two-thirds of Portland voters said yes. And I think what that shows is that folks are hungry for change. And I know I've been feeling that, too. I know everybody I've been talking to has been feeling that. We know from personal experience that this city is not working. And it is, there are so many things that we are behind on and we're not pointed in the right direction. So I think what that poll showed was that Portlanders are really eager and ready to get this city on track. And they can see that this is going to help us get there. Now, the poll also went on to say that if there was negative messaging, then support dropped to 49%. So that's really an indicator that we all need to show up and spread the facts and the information about this campaign and this measure so that folks can take an informed decision and know the consequences of what's going on, that we can't rest easy knowing that this is a for sure thing. But if voters heard both positive and negative messaging, support went to 56%.
Okay.
And so that means that, you know, there really is pretty durable support for this, but only if we make sure that people know about what's in the measure and are very well informed about it.
Tammy here. A quick question for you. What from either that survey or from doing, you know, grassroots work or work or teach-ins and stuff, what do you think, or what have you found to be the biggest misconceptions around this ballot measure?
Oh, I'm so glad for that question. Yeah, so, you know, some folks have been worried that there's too much in it. Some folks have been worried that, you know, I think the biggest misconception I've heard is that this would be an experimental or untested government system. And that's just not true. There's many democracies that have been using this form of multi-member city council districts, ranked choice voting, professional city administrator or manager for many, many decades. Some great examples in the United States are Cambridge, Massachusetts, and East Point, Michigan. And it's actually interesting. East Point, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit, moved to multi-member districts and ranked choice votings in part because of a civil rights violation, because the city's black voters were not having representation on their city council. And so they locally transitioned to a system like this in order to make it more possible for black residents of East Point, Michigan to be elected onto their local city council. And it's working. Mm-hmm. They implemented it recently, and it's already worked in the most recent election where they did that. So that is the biggest misconception that is out there right now, is that we'd be moving to an untested government system that is not done in any other U.S. city or anywhere else in the world, I've heard some people say. And that's just simply not true. This is the form of elections that is used in city council races in Scotland, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, and a growing number of cities in the United States.
Wow, yeah. So if this measure passes, what can voters expect? If we get this passed, what does the ballot look like in 2023, 2024?
Yeah, thank you so much. So if this measure passes, it's going to take precisely 2 years to implement everything and hold our first new city council election under the new system. So that'll be November 2024. It will line up with the presidential election.
Mm-hmm. Big year.
And in that election, we would elect our mayor and city auditor citywide using ranked choice voting. And then each of the four new geographic districts would elect three city councilors for a total of 12 city councilors. So after the ballot measure passes, if it passes, two independent commissions will be formed. One will be to draw those new city council districts in a fair and compact way. And the other commission will set the salary levels of the new city council members. So those two processes will immediately start and happen in 2023. And then in 2024, we'll have our first elections under the new system. And when those people take office in 2025, they'll have a city administrator running the bureaus, and the city councilors won't be managing the city services on a day-to-day basis anymore.
Ooh, that gets me so excited.
Yeah, me
Ooh!
Too.
That's all
finally.
Soon. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love to hear that outlined. So if folks are interested in learning more about the Charter Change Amendment, about the organization you're with, Portland United for Change, helping out with this campaign, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, thank you. The best place is our website, portlandunitedforchange.com. And you can also just Google Portland United for Change, and it should be the first result that comes up. On that page, we have a lot of information about the measure itself, some frequently asked questions that have come up a lot in times past, as well as the full list of supporters. And if you click on the Help Us Win button, that gives you lots of different ways that you can volunteer to support the campaign. And our events page has lots of canvassing opportunities, phone banking opportunities, and you can sign up for any of those from now to Election Day. I think it's really important for folks to go and really, you know, immerse themselves in this. There's a lot of new and unfamiliar content in this measure to mm-hmm. Portlanders. But that's not reason to be afraid, right? In the 1990s, vote by mail was new and unfamiliar for Oregonians when we were the first state to adopt that statewide. But then, you know, here we are many years later. Vote by mail definitely helped save our democracy mm-hmm. in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I think Measure 26228 is really following in that tradition of Portland leading the way on a democracy that works for everybody.
Very cool. Tammy, any final thoughts before we wrap with Damon here?
Oh, well, this has been really great, and like I said before, Althea's been talking about this and how when she found out about how the structure, City Hall is structured, she's just like, it doesn't make sense. It was like, she
totally.
Was like taking twine and putting it together, and it was just, it's like, it doesn't make any sense. So it's, you know, it's great that, Althea, you were,
Tammy's just excited to have you able here to speak with us so that I can finally shut up about it.
No, I do love it. I think I wanted real quick, you know, when we were talking about the misconceptions and the reactions that some folks had about there's too much here. Don't sell you deserve liberation. Like, you deserve.
Amen.
You deserve to have, like, a nice quality
actual
of
democracy.
Life. Like, it's fine. Like, you just, it's like. You deserve that. And you know what? Your neighbors deserve that, too. And
that's right.
What that intersectionality, that coalition work building, that's what it looks like. And that's why it is a lot, because we have a, you know, common through line that we all live together. So why not try to look out for each other? And you deserve it. You deserve good things. You deserve democracy.
That part
exactly.
Right there.
It's okay, guys. I don't know who hurt us, but we can do better. And here we are doing better.
Here we are. Well, folks, you've been listening to our interview with Damon Mott-Story, the communications manager for Portland United for Change, which is advocating for the passage of the Portland Charter Change Measure 26228. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was just a joy.
Yay. Okay, so we are going to take a little quick musical break here on The Gap. We'll be back with our second half and our community question. This is KBOO Portland. We'll see you in a sec.
Tells me your heart's a sleeping giant, wanna buy some wine you love.
And we are back. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. And that was Esperanza, local town hero. I love it. I'm feeling in a jazzy mood. I'm jazzed up.
From the jazz, and I'm jazzed from that interview.
That was so
good. I gotta take it down a notch. I think I'm peaking on this microphone. This chair is also creaky. I don't like that.
That was so great. That was really fantastic. Yes, and all of that, that interview is going to be online afterwards.
Yes.
KBOO.fm/TheGap. I learned so much. I was just like, it was so great. I love this opportunity that we get to do this type of work on KBOO. And speaking of KBOO and the listeners and you.
Me?
The capital
U. Oh, the collective.
Or I guess capital Y.
Capital Y.
The collective. The phone lines are open for our community questions. The phone number is 503-231-8187. Almost gave up my own phone number for a second.
Glad that you didn't.
I didn't. I've been practicing. Althea, do you want to ask our community question for the listeners to call in?
Yes. Our community question for you today is, what is something that you got curious about and what did you find out? And we got a couple of examples. I actually have a zillion examples of this.
Mess around and find out, as they say.
Mess around and find out, they say, is the clean version of that phrase. So many of the little factoids and stories that I know just come from, noticing something maybe in my neighborhood and saying, that's interesting. Why is that? And doing a little bit of research, asking around, and you never know what you might find. So if you want to talk to us about that, please do give us a call, 503-231-8187.
When you, I finally found my notes, I didn't realize I had them right in front of me.
Oh, you brought them. Hey, there you go.
I always have them with me, but yes, what's something that you got curious about and what did you find out? And while we were talking about this question with each other, we were, I wanted to start it off with, that there's no asking stupid questions, in my opinion. I don't like that. I says there's no quote unquote, there's no, I don't even like that word. There's no silly questions, but there are questions that are not in good faith.
Yeah.
That's when people are just trying to test you.
Right.
And that's when they mess around and find out.
Right.
And also have pot belly pigs.
You were curious
about what all that was and you found out.
Yeah, so I grew up in Seattle, and growing up, all of the elementary schools always had this sign outside the playground that said, no cats, no dogs, no pot-bellied pigs. And I went through my whole young life seeing that, thinking, huh, that's funny, I've never seen a pot-bellied pig around here. Not until I was an adult. This is one of the things that I love about journalism, to be honest with you. I saw it again visiting home and I got curious again. Hey, what is that? I've always seen that. I've joked about it as a child. And looking it up, I found a terrific explainer on it from a local journalist in Seattle that talked about how in the 90s, teacup pigs became a fad. They became something that was popular, but were they all really teacup pigs that people were buying? No, they weren't. They were just small regular pigs or small pot-bellied pigs. So it became a trend for people to have pot-bellied pigs in the city, even though nowadays there's maybe one lady that still has one within city limits. They're still featured on all of these signs, which don't bring your cat, don't bring your dog, don't bring your pot-bellied pig. And that's interesting. I love that little anecdote.
I'm just imagining it, and it sounds like a very adorable time.
It's kind of like evocative because it has the silhouettes of all the animals. So it's like silhouette of a dog, silhouette of a cat, silhouette of a kid with a big red circle and a line through it. It's like, hey, don't do it.
No piggies here.
No pigs here.
But I think that is the early journalistic sense percolating within you. I think that when I first moved to our fair city, I was drawn to North Portland for whatever reason. And I think just mostly I saw more African stuff there and I'm like, okay, cool. This is a safe place. And I saw all this mentions of Vanport. I'm like, what is this? What is this Vanport stuff? And then got curious, found out. And then marred my feeling about the area for a bit. But then, it's like, again, there's people doing all this work to like restore things and to kind of like get justice, you know, just to get justice and mm-hmm. and get people connected and educated about our history and then how we can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I met like great people, a lot of like, you know, elders and stuff. And it's been really great learning with them and getting their perspective, especially because it's not a very, you know, black town. So I was really happy that, and that came from like seeing like, you know, all like just different mentions of it, like walking down on the street and like mm-hmm. different plaques and stuff, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm like, what is this? There aren't like, you know, sound like it was like an airport or something. And then mm-hmm. I was like, oh no, this is a sad occasion. Mm-hmm. But we do have a listener on the line. Lou, you are on the air with us.
Good morning. How are you?
We are well. How are you?
Researching.
There it is. Curiosity.
Well, I went to, I'm not sure, I got the last part of the interview on the charter reform staffer, but I might have mentioned Portland Great Panthers endorsed it. We think people should vote yes on charter reform. But I went to research what the no side said. There was a debate last night. You might have seen it, or you might have been there. Three people who are yes speakers, Melanie, Candace, and Saul. All women, and then three no speakers, TJ, Mingus Maps, who's on city council and is against it, and and Vadim Mazursky was there as well. So I thought your staff, the person that just talked for Portland United for Change, was really effective on delineating that it tends to be a group of individuals that have benefited from the system that are opposing it. And then it tends to be this really wide. Portland Great Panthers is glad to be one. We're a low-income group, so we put together $400 to put a voter's pamphlet statement in supporting the charter reform measure. But I also think that it kind of overlaps with something I believe your program mentioned last week, which is who benefits from the current system. You might have mentioned, I didn't listen to your whole program this morning, sorry, Rene Gonzalez got fined $77,000 for violating a small donor program with an office space donation from Jordan Schnitzer. But you might have seen already, it was denied. His challenge to that was denied, and he's still supposed to pay the $77,000. But Schnitzer's interesting because he's donating to Betsy Johnson, People for Portland, basically conservative political causes, and he's someone who's benefited from the system for a while. So that is kind of my research thing. I should also mention we have a forum, Great Panthers, at Portland State on the ballot measure, charter reform. It's Wednesday, October 12th at 6 p.m. at Portland State Mexican Grill Cafe, which is 1927 Southwest 6 on Max. Did you have any things that you learned from the speaker this morning that you didn't know about charter reform, pro or con?
I think, Damon, they covered a lot of great stuff this morning. And thank you for mentioning that and your event that's coming up. And
that's fine. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. But I was also just going to relate it to our community question about getting curious and what did you find out and making connections about where you live. Who are the big players? What are they up to? And what are they working towards? I think makes our lives all richer. But yeah, thanks for calling, Lou.
Appreciate it. Yes, community question is getting curious. What is something that piqued your curiosity and what did you find out about it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of something that's maybe not as heavy.
Yeah. But well, the sidewalk one. I think I gave you a little lecture about why you can't park on the corners of the sidewalks.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. This is my personal. Can I do PSAs or I can't do that?
Well, it's not technically a PSA,
it's a personal service announcement
for the benefit of the public. You want to say
this is for the benefit of the public.
Sure.
Okay. You know how there's those yellow or mustard colored things that look like they have cleats, but they're like at the
they got bumps on them.
They got the bumps on them, and they're at the end of the sidewalk, and they're kind of like it's a part that kind of like goes into the road, and it has grooves on it, and it's mm-hmm. yellow and it's bright. Those things are for folks who are blind and for accessibility. Mm-hmm. So if you park your car in front of one of those, that is terrible. Mm-hmm. I said it. I didn't know this. And someone said, you know what you're doing? You know what it's for? I said, I don't know. They told me. I swore I'll never do it again. I got to get this phone call.
Yeah. Well, I think we at one point did have a conversation about it because I had years ago parked, not like blocking it, but just like the back of my car was slightly over like the where it starts to slope down. Got a pretty fine for that one. Thought I was making it work in the space. I was not. But you know, those fines are extra because it is something that impedes people's ability to get around and to cross the street safely.
So if you think you can nudge it and you're like, well, I'm not sticking out, and you're sticking out a little bit. No.
That's $200. That's $200 in 2019. So I don't know what it is now.
And also, you could actually be, like, really endangering someone whose life is already, like, in danger because of the elements and the really,
infrastructure that is unfriendly.
I was so upset with myself when I said, I didn't know all these years of the, all these years. I haven't been driving that long, but let me stop. We do have another caller on the line. Lorraine, you are on the air with us.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for the program. Speaking of East County, I found out from a security guard at Midland Library that the library would be closing for 2 years starting in November for renovations. And the library was just renovated a few years ago, so I was really surprised. Well, yesterday I had, or the day before yesterday, I talked to someone who was taking pictures of the front of Midland Library very briefly, a man, and he got into his great big old truck. So I went over there and waved for him, and he spoke with me through his truck window. And I asked him if he was a contractor, and he said, on the job, and he said, well, if they accept my bid. And so the bids aren't quite in yet. But I asked him what was going on, and why were they renovating our library yet again? It's very big. And he said, well, they're looking at that 10-year plan. This is what he said. It may or may not be correct, but that they had some money to spend and that they're going to build out into the park a little bit. And I thought, this is crazy, because we have Rockwood, which is quite far away for people on foot, and then Woodstock, which is very small library, and then I think they're also closing Holgate. So that's what I had to say. I heard about it. I was really surprised. I spoke to this man, and I discovered that I don't think the bids are all in yet. So I contacted through the Portland, through City of Portland, I contacted Deb Cafori's office, her number 503-988-3308. And then I contacted Jessica Vega Peterson's office, 503-988-5217. And I also called Commissioner Joanne Hardesty's office and left her a message, because I feel that it'll affect the livability of East County, and people have just gone through 2 years of just hell, and I don't think they should do that to our little spot here in East County. Anyway, I feel that if they need a bigger library, then they take funds and build them, and I've always supported library measures with my votes, but I feel that this is a real hardship that doesn't need to happen, and I wonder if this is also a way for them to just put a big cage around Midland Library and eliminate homeless camping in and around, because there's a big car lot across the street, and I just wonder who's talking to who in these business alliances and having their plans, and most of the people here not even knowing that the library is going to close. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman said they were going to build a new clock tower. And I said, they just fixed the old clock tower a few months ago. And I was dancing around because I was so happy. So anyway, that's my, sorry.
Well, thank you for alerting us to this. I'm doing a little bit of research of my own, and says that it won't start until May of next year. So still, very,
right,
very
but if the bids are accepted, you know, if the process is going on, they might not be able to stop it if they promise the money.
Right. Well,
but anyway, thank you so much. That was my curiosity and the little bit that I found out. So thank you. Thank you for the show.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We got Tawasi on the line.
Piqued my curiosity. Tawasi, can
you
hear
us?
Hey. There it is.
I hear you. You know, I was curious, since Zenith Energy doesn't seem to be stopping, you know, none of the Chevron, Exxon, British Petroleum, none of these guys seem to be stopping. So I was curious, what can I do to make the world a little bit better? And so I looked up which trees sequester the most carbon, and I learned that it's willow trees. So, yeah, I was curious about which trees are most beneficial, and it turns out if you plant a willow tree in the first 3 years of its life, it will sequester the most carbon of any tree.
Dang.
Yeah. And they're working on these genetically modified, patented life forms that sequester the most carbon of any tree, and they're, of course, based on willow trees.
Fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's a great factoid. And, yeah, you know, people out there planting, maybe curious, something to think about.
If you're curious what you can do to make the world a little bit better, plant a willow tree. It's the best tree you can do.
Very cool. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Appreciate that. Always a pleasure.
And we appreciate everybody who called in talking about getting curious. You know, what do you find out? Search it on Google. You know what I searched on Google
We have to say search engine on the
search
show.
Search engine. No, sorry.
I'm pretending like we're like sponsored by
Google. No, we're sponsored by Bing. No, we're not. Sorry. That's too funny. That's too much of a joke.
Ask Jeeves.
You know what I looked up? Are foxes cats? They're not, but I thought they might be. They're canines. In case anybody wanted to know. You know, get curious.
Yeah.
Do a little research. It doesn't have to be in encyclopedia. Like, Wikipedia is... randomize a search on Wikipedia.
Oh, there's
You find wild things on
Redacted
there.
Redacted is a fun game. That way you
Redactyl!
Learn.
Yeah, oh, Redactyl. I haven't played it in a while.
Well, we have 2 minutes left.
Yeah, we gotta shut it down.
This was really fantastic, and I got curious. I thank you, listeners, for piquing my interest. And we hope to always pique your interest. At the least, if not at the most, get you informed to, you know, take control of your life and see what's out there on the community level, on the interpersonal level with the community question. And I'm so stoked to be back in the studio with you, Althea.
Yay!
And our first in-person guest of the year.
Yeah, I think so.
There it is.
Yeah.
Of the year.
Good stuff. 2022. We got it in.
Yeah.
No, don't even worry about it. We want to thank you all so much for listening. This has been The Gap Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. We're on every Friday at 8 a.m., so catch us next week. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email, thegapradio@gmail.com. We have an Instagram account, @thegapradio. And if you want to send us some snail mail, we'd love to do a mailbag segment. Mail it to The Gap, courtesy of KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
Ooh,
I have been Althea.
I'm Tammy.
And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya.